We have a different event going on today. How many of you can ever remember me sharing somebody else's message with you? Most everything that I do on a Sunday morning is something that the Lord and I had developed in the week prior to that, or sometimes further than that. I was in Camp Adeline on June 20th, and Bishop Ron Ramsey was there to share a message. How many of you got to be a part of that? Don and Denise and I got to be a part of that. And I was impressed by it. When I was there, I actually took two full pages on both sides of notes. Now, one page on both sides was what he did before lunch, and then Cookie fed us lunch, and he came back and did after lunch. So what he got to do took almost 4 hours. And don't expect me to spend that much time doing it this morning. Not because it's not a good message, not because the Lord and I couldn't, but just a time constraint. Anyway, it was a really good message. And when I was helping him pack up all of his stuff, I was complimenting him on the message. I said, I really like that. That was really good. And he pulled the little zip drive out of the side of his Apple computer, and it says, it's on here. You want it? And I said, yeah. So I plugged it into my USB port and zipped it off and stuck it into my documents with a mental note to look for a time to do that. I handed out sermon outlines for the rest of the year to the worship people this morning, and when I got back to the pastor's cabin at Camp Adeline, I looked for the first available. You ever go to a restaurant, look, I'll take first available. I don't care if it's smoking or non-smoking, first available. And the first available date in scheduling at that time was today. So I clicked and added that on today I was going to do Ron's message. And little did I know at that time how much went into that. As I've been working with the message through the week, I've talked to several people in Huntington that there was a, when you click on it to open it, there's an author's name, Shelley Rupert. And I had some questions about how to get some of the things to work in here, so I called and asked for her. And Bishop's secretary said, well, she doesn't work here anymore, but here's her number. And I said, well, actually, what I was wanting was this. And she said, well, Shelley didn't produce that. I made that. Oh, well, good. Then the Lord's sovereignty and provision has put me with the person I need. And so she says, well, I still have that on my computer. So I'm sitting there with my notebook on my knees, and she's sitting at her desktop, and we're talking about this message. And she says, well, I don't have the slides that you're asking me about. They're not in my presentation. And I said, okay, then I probably want Jonesy. I probably want Pat Jones. She says, oh, if it does this and it does that, you definitely want Pat. You don't want Ron. Pat Jones is the director of Healthy Church Development, and he's a whiz. And when we talk through this message about presenting the gospel in a relevant, current way, Pat is right on the green edge of how to do that. Anyway, so there was a number of people involved in developing this message that is entitled Seeking the Lost, and I subtitled it Establishing a Ministry on Mission. And here's Ron's first question on your outline in your orange bulletin there, your fall-colored bulletin. There should be a question. Yeah, there sure is. Why did Jesus come? And here's what it says in Luke 19:10. For the Son of Man came to seek and save what was lost. So, what does it mean to be lost? To not know Christ, or in a physical sense, have you ever been lost and had no idea where you were? Oh yeah. It's easy to do, and when you're lost, you don't know how to get unlost. You need some sort of help to get unlost, don't you? GPS is really cool. You know, somebody coming out and finding you and helping you. But, and here's the part there's a green thing that comes up there that says lost. You can probably see it better down here than anything else. And that's a Pat Jones gig. And at that point, the screen broke into a video presentation of the church and the depravity of church in our culture, which I discovered I had to go out and buy a different media software and a decompressor to make it work. And when I looked at the amount of money it would take to do that, I decided I'm just going to delete that slide and tell you there was a really cool slide there. That if I would have spent $200 on more software, I could have run that media presentation for you, which doesn't mean that I won't do that someday, but I didn't do it today. Here's some quotes to make you think, and I think they'll challenge you. William wrote a book, Dancing with Dinosaurs, and this is what it says, a quote. If churches only improve what they have been doing, they will die. Bureaucracies and traditional practice are a major cause of the decline of denominations in North America. If we only continue the bureaucratic ways we're doing things, if we only continue to do status quo, our denominations, our churches, will continue to decline. George Barna, his quote from the Second Coming of the Church. Let's cut to the chase. After nearly two decades of studying Christian churches in America, I'm convinced that the typical church, as we know it today, has a rapidly expiring shelf life. What does a rapidly expiring shelf life mean? You got to eat it up. Julie thought Chris and I were going to tear out her patio out back, so she quick scurried out and gathered four bags of fresh Italian sweet basil and put it into the garage refrigerator. And when she got her bottled water out this morning, she says, "Oh, Wilmer, you could put that into a landfill. It's been in there 2 weeks in Ziploc bags. Is it good?" No. It has a rapidly expiring shelf life, doesn't it? The church as we know it, according to George Barna, who is one of the most credible statisticians in our culture, says it's got an expiring shelf life. Here's another Walt turning the church inside out. I know that I'm generalizing here, and what I'm saying cannot be said of every church. Nevertheless, generalizations do disclose general truths. And it is not too much to say that the church of our time and our place is largely inwardly focused. It has lost sight of the world outside the walls, which is to say, the church has also lost sight of God, who works in the lives of the world, or works in and loves the world, and that is a genuine tragedy. Walt is telling us that in general terms, most churches establish and stay functional for the family and the friends and the people that are still inside. Most churches, and I think it would probably be true of many lives in the congregation today, when you think of church, you think of the people that are in church or are missing from church today, who are normally here, right? Rather than the people that you've brushed shoulders with or contracted infectious germs from this week, who you didn't invite to church. We've become inwardly focused in our culture. How about this? Here's where you fill in the blanks. 3,000 to 4,000 churches are your first two blanks. 3,000 to 4,000 churches close their door annually in the U.S. Did you know that? Every year, 3,000 to 4,000 churches close their door. Annually, 1,000 to 1,500 churches, there's your two blanks, a grand to a grand and a half, of churches are planted annually in the United States. Some of you who are close to me know that I have the opportunity to be involved in a new church plant. And I have to decide and talk with the board next board meeting about being involved in a new church plant in our community. The last point is this. The net loss is between 30 to 58 churches every, what's your word? Every week of this year, 30 to 60 churches will close their doors and pack it up. Clarence, how many churches have you sold in the last 10 years? More than you want to remember, right? We have sold churches. Clarence, the Illinois trustee for the United Brethren, has sold churches. Why? Because their doors closed. 30 to 60 of them do it every week. Probably twice a week. I'd like to throw in the towel and quit too. Seriously. This is not an easy gig. It's the hardest job I've ever had. I know why people quit. If I wasn't sure that Jesus loved me and He called me to do it, I wouldn't have been here this long, honey. Sir, I would not have stayed this long. And a lot of people pack it up and quit. Now, North America is the only continent on planet Earth, the only culture on planet Earth where Christianity is not growing is us in the United States of America. We are the only place. Were you surprised at that? November 11th, I'm going to be at a missionary conference and they're wanting to send a lot of mission money to the Asian countries. And I'd like to present to them, I think we should evangelize our own culture. No county in the U.S. has seen even 1% of increase in church attendance in the past 10 years. It's really 7.8%. In 10 years, the increase in church attendance is less than 1%. How many of you knew that? There are not more people going to church. This morning I was taking my mother-in-law to her church. And many times a week I get to the end of Science Ridge Road at Route 40 to go somewhere. Sometimes it's to the hospital. Sometimes it's to... But many times a week I am there about the same time in the morning. Sunday morning I get up to the stop sign and I look every direction and there isn't a car coming. I can't see one out the windshield, out the side windows, or in the rear view mirror. And I made the comment to the girls, not much traffic today. Why? No one's going to church. It's Sunday. No one's going to church. I shouldn't say no one. Not very many people. Not very many people are going to church. According to George Barna, only 18.7% of the population in the U.S. go to church on a weekend. 90% of the congregations in the U.S. are plateaued or declining. Does that fit us? Are we plateaued and declining? You know, we are. Some of our members went to another church this morning rather than come here. And I will guarantee that in that church that he went to, there are people who didn't go to that church because they either didn't go anywhere because they're discouraged and disillusioned, or they went to someplace else looking for something. How many of you have heard that there are, you know, most churches are like revolving doors, as many people come in the front as go out the back? People are looking for something, even if they go to church. Here's Wilmer's questions. This wasn't one of Ron's questions. What do you think about those facts? What are your thoughts? Scary. Right. Right. There are some churches in our culture and in our community who have revamped the delivery system of the gospel. There is a church in the Rockford area. Julie and I have been there for Friday night church. It was really fun. Go to Friday night church and then we'd go out to dinner in Rockford. We went to Saturday night church and then we went out to eat in Rockford. And both of them were good feedings. But the delivery system is different. It's not the traditional bureaucratic church-style church. It doesn't look like a church. The church that Connie's talking about. Doesn't look like a church. The church that I'm considering being involved in planting in Sterling doesn't look like a church. It looks like a coffee shop. It doesn't sound like a church. It sounds like a 1960s concert, 1970s concert. It doesn't sound like a church. It doesn't feel like a church. And ever, if it ever got that way, we would quit. Our worst fear is it's going to become religious and stop being what God called it to be. So here's the growth barriers that Bishop Ramsey shared with us. There is a barrier of vision is your blank. And primarily that's the focus as I take the second page of this and develop into a message and bring with you soon. Vision is an important thing. Leadership. There's a barrier of leadership. That's your second blank. Your third blank is a barrier of team, of people working together on an equal plane as a team. A barrier of community. You may not see that as a barrier, but having a church clique, people that you go to church to fellowship with, is a barrier to new people coming into a church. Having a good, tight church community is a barrier to new people coming in. How about presentation? The way the gospel is delivered makes a big difference in our culture. So presentation is a barrier. And the last barrier is follow through. The faithfulness to finish that. Those are areas that Bishop Ramsey shared with us are barriers to the church. Because if churches need to change their vision, there's a lot of people who struggle with that change. And it's a barrier to change the vision of what we want, to change the leadership and the way we do things. And who does what is difficult in many churches. So, we're going to talk about those more in the time to come. But I want you to catch those, that those are all components that need to be addressed in our church. Now, here's our convictions. Inward focus versus outward focus. Most churches in our culture that are established and been around for a while are inward focused. They are not focused on the outside. Our conviction is, and the challenge that our denomination has, and the challenge that we have as individuals, is to begin to be more outward focused. More, who isn't here yet, and who is it that I have relationship with that could be involved in what we do for the glory of God? So, outward focus. A satisfied organization versus a forceful organism. How many of you remember reading Love, Acceptance, and Forgiveness? One of the first books I asked you to read was Love, Acceptance, and Forgiveness. And the concept of that book is the church being a force, not the church being a field. Many churches, you bring people into the church and that's where we cultivate them and develop them. The concept that I have, and I'm really delighted that Ron and Pat have the same one, is that the church is a force that has an impact on the community and the culture that we live in. We are not mandated by the culture, but we impact the culture. We reach out. We change that. We are a force. And a lot of that is going to be in the delivery system of how we interact with people during the week and how we interact with people when we get to do church on whatever days we decide to do it. And that should change. One of the things that could possibly change is music. And for years and years, there's been a classic hymn, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. And for those of us who grew up in the Lutheran church, it was done on the big organ and it was, you know. Well, How many of you know the origins of that song? Martin Luther took a bar song melody and an organ. Organs were only in the bars. They weren't in church in that time. He brought the organ into the church. He brought the tune from the bar into the church and wrote the text, "For a mighty fortress is our God." Why? So that the bar people were happy to come to church and sing a tune they knew. Right? He wasn't interested in the people who were already in the church. He was interested in the people who were in the bar, and he brought parts of the bar into the church so the people would feel comfortable in the church. That's a force. But then what's happened is, oh my gosh, we can't take the organ out of church, even though we don't play it. We can't take the organ out of church because we got to have the organ music in the church, which originally came from the bar. You see what I'm saying? In that time, it was provocative. In our time, it's antiquated. How many of you listened to an organ song during the week? Had a really good organ music going on your CD player this week. In your car stereo. You probably wouldn't find one on DVD, but you probably could get a cassette tape of an organ music. And how many of you love to listen to organ music through the week? No. That's the deal. We need to become a force. What we need to do is hold fast to Jesus Christ. Never give up the purity and the simplicity of the gospel. But we need to grab hold of our culture in a way that impacts it. So we're not changing the gospel. We're not changing the good news. We're not taking Jesus out of it to make it culturally relevant. We're not going to make it into something that it's not. We're just going to change how we present it to people. Here's our journey. I don't know if you'll be able to see these four pictures very well. You can probably see them better on my notebook than you can see them up there. But this is an artesian well. That one is a hand pump. How many of you know of a hand pump? The other one is a kitchen sink, and the other one is a bathroom faucet. Now then, what do all of those have in common? Water. The delivery system of water. How many of you have ever bought one of these things? And you thought, dang, I wished I would have thought of putting a bottle in a water. Do you realize that $7.4 billion this year will be spent in our nation on bottled $7 billion on bottled water. It takes 1/3 of the bottle size of water, of oil, to make the bottle, to fill it full of water. And the big ramp in our culture is our landfills are filling up with bottles from bottled water. And the value of having water in a bottle is diminishing in some people's minds. But it's a delivery system of water, isn't it? Originally, they built cultures near wells, near rivers, so they could get water. I want you to read this book, Change Your Church for Good, The Art of Sacred Cow Tipping. How many of you have seen the movie Cars? Pixar's Cars, I played it for you here. In Cars, Mater and Lightning McQueen go cow tipping. You ever seen that? In every machine is a personality. The tractors are cows, and the combine is the bull. And the cows are out sleeping in the field, and they'll sneak up on him, and Mater will beep his horn, and Lightning will rev his motor, and the cows go woo, and they stand up on their back wheels, and Mater and Lightning just laugh and laugh and laugh and laugh. And then that combine, Frank, chases him out of the field. The bull chases him out of the field for messing with his cows. Anyway, The Art of Sacred Cow Tipping. I want you to read this book. The longest chapter in this book to date, we're getting to the solution. The longest chapter is on delivery system. Not changing the gospel, but how we deliver the system. Now, last year I would buy 20 books and consistently have books left. So, how many of you would read this book if I buy it for you? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay? So I will buy a dozen, trusting that some two other people will do that. But I want you to read that book, and a lot of what Brad talks about is the delivery system of the water. And that's the point of Bishop's slide here, is it's not the delivery system, it's about getting the living water, the gospel, to the lost people. Now, how many of you go down to the stream and dip out water? Walk to the community hand pump. Right? No, we have lots of it. I had neighbors drive into my driveway yesterday because we have a problem in my community. We have several different influences of waste into the ground, and wells in my community, a really, really, really nice community, are contaminated. And they keep shocking them and they can't kill the bacteria. And mine is one of the few wells in the neighborhood that when I have it tested is still good. We don't get diarrhea and lower intestinal sickness from the bacteria that's in the water. And Julie says, wonder why that is. I say, it's just purely and simply because God likes us and is taking care of His own. Right? The delivery system has a problem. The water is contaminated. We don't want to distribute contaminated water to people. We want to say distribute good water. But how we distribute it is going to change in how we package it if we want people to drink it. If people are spending billions of dollars to drink this stuff out of these things, why don't we market it in a way that they would drink the living water? That's the point. The lost people need the gospel. Three basic assumptions. Number one, if a church is not growing, it's sick. Could you agree with that? If a church is not growing, it's sick. I have grandkids that I like a whole bunch, and we were telling grandkids stories almost all the way to church today, and they are changing as they grow. Bishop used his grandkids, so I can use mine. He was actually leaving us early to go on vacation with his grandkids. And EJ, his wife, even came along this time because they were going to get to go play with the grandkids. The last time he came visit us, he stopped and spent the night with the grandkids. And had she known he was spending the night at the grandkids' house, she would have come along too. The grandkids are growing. Now, if your grandkids or your children aren't growing, you're concerned, right? So, if we're not growing, we should be concerned because there's something sick that needs to be fixed. If a church is not growing by making disciples for Jesus Christ, then it is disobedient is your blank. I think I put that as a blank, didn't I? Yeah. If we're not making disciples for Jesus Christ, we're being disobedient. And lastly, there's a difference between apples and oranges. Now, what's the difference between apples and oranges? How many of you have ever eaten an apple? Apple a day is really good for you. Eat the ones with the red skins on them. The red tannins are good for you. And oranges are good for you. But what's different about the structure of the two?
Apple, you eat the skin. Orange,
you don't. Yeah?
Color.
If you get inside, an apple is basically one piece, isn't it? When you get inside, oranges are segmented. The point is, as a church grows, it develops segments like an orange. It starts out like an apple, but it changes and transforms. When you get around 200 people, they say, churches begin to segment. As I drop my mother off at her church, she says, oh yeah, the elders are meeting. They're all in a hubbub about getting another pastor. And I said, well, they're probably getting around 200 people in your congregation. When you get 200 people in your congregation, you've waited too long to get a second man to help run the ministry. You can't run a church of over 200 people with only one pastor and expect it to continue to grow. She says, well, yeah, there is about 200 people here most of the time now. I said, that's why they're looking at another guy. Because it begins to segment and one guy cannot do it all. Now, here's the life cycle of a church. Everything has a life cycle. It starts at birth on the left, goes to infancy, childhood, adolescent, adulthood, maturity, empty nest syndrome, retirement, old age, and death. Everything starts at birth and goes to death. Churches are no different. Churches are no different. They have a life cycle as well. Now, in the middle there, you see there's four different components. There's vision. Where are we going? We need a vision. Secondly, relationship. Who is going with us? That's the relationship part. The third one is ministry. How do we get there? And the fourth one is structure. On each one of these points, you'll see those letters. At birth, there's primarily vision. But the relationship, the ministry, structures, not too much. At infancy, you begin to develop relationships. Not only do you have a vision, but you start to realize there's other people and you start to have relationships with other people. My granddaughter is extremely relational. She's beginning to understand that there's other people and she wants to relate with them. In her childhood, in her infancy. Now, when you get to childhood, you not only have a vision, you not only have a relationship, but you have a ministry. You want to get somewhere and you want to do something. That carries you on through adolescence. And at adulthood, you begin to add structure into your life. You begin to get married. That structures your life in a different way. You begin to have children. That changes the structure of your life. And the same way at church. At adulthood, the church has all the components that are necessary and it's peeking out on that crest. And then it goes over the crest to maturity where the vision begins to become less and more what is involved in your life is your relationship, where you're going, how you're going to get there, and your structure. And as you get older, what happens is you have more diminished vision and relationship. How many of you know of anybody in your life that's having a midlife crisis? Anybody know of anybody that's having a midlife crisis? And what happens in a midlife crisis is you lose your vision of what's life all about. That's the crisis of midlife crisis. What do we do now? And it's the same way in a church. Bishop drew a bunch of these on a whiteboard, and you can revision your church in adulthood or maturity, revision your church and re-arch it. You don't have to continue the decline. But what it requires is a revisioning. Churches that are dying down here, all that they have left is their structure. See that? Old age and death, what you have is structure. And churches that are dying, they hold fast and tight to their structure rather than the other components. As I lead you into the next year, I want us to work with this growth cycle to revision our church and revamp our delivery system in a way that we could change that downward arch. Now, when someone visits your church, they're not looking for a friendly church. They're looking for a friend. People say, oh, we have a real friendly church, which means you have a church fellowship where you're friendly with everybody else there. But when people come, they want a friend. How do people go to church? A friend invites them. So that means you don't socialize and visit with your church friends when people come to church, but you friend and befriend the new people that are here. Does that make sense? They're looking for a friend, not a friendly church. Vision. How are we going to impact our community? Every percentage of what we do is defined in ministry area by our vision. We look at everything that we do, every single event, every single structure of our church, and it has to fit into the vision of the church. If it doesn't fit into the vision of the church, we stop doing it. Now, when Brad was showing us this book and talking to us about National Conference, he had been having a Wednesday night service in his church for 8 years. And Brad says, in the next few months, I'm going to stop having a Wednesday night church service because it doesn't fit the vision of the church. It's not productive to the vision of the church. We're going to change Wednesday night church. And he says, I'm going to catch a lot of flack over that Because we've been doing it for years. What is that? Structure. It's not the developmental system that's delivering the gospel most effectively to the community, because the only people who come to Wednesday night church are the people that go to church. So let's do church on Friday night, Saturday morning, Saturday night. Let's do it on another time if Wednesday night isn't working, right? But you have to change the structure, and it's defined by mission. In the U.S., 80 to 90% of the churches are plateaued or dying. And here's reasons we could adopt for doing church. Number one, we could do church for us. We could do church for those who aren't here yet. Or we could do church for both. We could do church just for us, so that we have a good time, so that our kids are safe, so that we enjoy our time together and we have great snacks and we really enjoy visiting with each other. I mean, we could do that if we want to. We could set that as our vision if we want. But chances are we'll end up looking like when I went to Center Hill last Sunday. Most people there are twice as old as me. Right? They don't have new people coming in, younger people coming in. They're all getting older, and they're amazingly older. You know? Listen to Bob preach at 96 or 7 years old. Bishop and I both emailed each other back and forth, and we do electric contact all the time. He's our hero. We would both like to still be doing that at 90 plus, right? He did a good job. But we need to bring in young blood as well. And we need to do church for one of those. Now, here's the last question that Bishop had. Who will receive the priority? And I think number two, if we're going to seek the lost, we probably should be a priority. You will end up doing it for both. Okay? Now, here's Wilmer's addition to the question. What are you going to do with these facts? Tonight, if you're following me, and you're reading the Bible through, you will read 1 Timothy chapter 1. I ask you to follow me in reading the Bible, because all of us need to be nourished. Now, because there's an evening Bears game on, I read my New Testament this morning, so I wasn't delinquent and didn't do it. And here's what I read this morning. Here is a trustworthy saying that deserves full acceptance. Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners, of whom I am the worst. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. And of all the lost, I, Wilmer, am the worst. Paul was a pretty good guy compared to me. I'm the worst of all sinners. But he came to seek and save me. I am so thankful that every week I ask people about their relationship with Christ. I asked 3 people to come to church this Sunday. None of them showed up. But I asked them, and I invited them, and I encouraged them. How many did you? And the only reason I want them is because I want them to get into a community where God can speak to their life and change their life. Now, for that very reason, I was shown mercy so that in me, the worst of sinners, Christ might display His unlimited patience. Oh man, is that true in my life? As an example to those who believe on Him and receive eternal life. He wants to express His life through you to other people. The last couple books that I asked you to read were How to Share Your Faith with Somebody. Just walk across the room and talk to them, right? Isn't it? All that I've asked you to do in most of the materials that I've asked you to read are how to express this life to other people. That's what I want us to be doing. Now, I can't make you do it. And I won't beat you up about it. But I will show you the reason why. Now, to the King eternal, immortal, invisible, the only God, be honor and glory forever and ever. Amen. That's why you should do it. Because of Him. To glorify Him, to honor Him, to be obedient, loving children. He came to seek and save the lost, and He wants to do that through you.